Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I am Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. Today's program, we're going to spend a little time talking about, so you want to start a business, huh? But listen, this is going to help you, even if you're not planning on starting a business. If you're working in a business and you have a leadership role in a business, well, then you need to be somewhat of an entrepreneur. And what I hope to do is a bit of encouragement and a bit of help to those, to you and to those of you who may be thinking of starting a business of any type. On the way to the studio today, I was talking with my son. We were having lunch, and Trey and I were talking about how negative things are today, or at least how negative they're perceived. If you listen to whether you're a whether you like left-wing type things or right-wing type things, whichever one you listen to, you hear over and over and over again how terrible things are. Things are so terrible. Business is terrible. The economy's terrible. With this guy in the White House, you know, there's no way for a business to be successful. Or with this particular Congress, there's no way for a business to be successful. Or with this governor or whatever. Look, that's all nonsense. There are many, many, many businesses doing well. Our business at EMA, we're having a record year this year. And I'm not the only one. There are a lot of people. That's not to say that there are not some real negative parts about the economy, but there are always negative times about the economy. I actually think this is one of the best times in history to start a business. There are more opportunities. There are more ways to reach customers than ever before. And it's a very positive way to look at it. I hear people talking like they want to go back to the 90s or to some other period of time. I think it's very self-defeating to think that way. What we're in right now is probably normal. It may be a new normal, but it's normal. This is how it is now. You've got to be successful now. If you're going to be a successful business, you've got to be successful in this climate because it may not change. Now, over time, it will either get better or worse. It doesn't matter. You can't build a business based on the national economy. Does it affect us? Well, of course it does. It affects us in a lot of ways. What you've got to do is be smart enough, quick enough, and nimble enough to move around in the economy no matter what the business is. You know, there's something innate in us, I think, that wants to blame outside forces for why we can't do things. And so we like to blame the economy or politicians or our competitors or in the worst case, I've heard people actually blame their customers for their problems. Well, that's very short-sighted. You know what's very empowering, though, actually, is if you take the responsibility for yourself. And here's why. And I have to do this to myself occasionally, too. I'm as bad as anyone else at falling into the trap of blaming other people for my problems. And it's when I stop and say, I'm the problem. I'm the problem. If we have an employee that's not working out at work, I'm the problem. Because, you know, as long as I'm the leader of the organization, then any employee is there at my pleasure. So if we have a bad employee and he's not doing a good job, it is my fault. Perhaps I haven't coached the guy enough. Perhaps I haven't built a company that has an environment where he can be successful. A lot of reasons, but I'm the problem. And here's what's empowering about that. If I'm the problem, then I'm the solution. And see, that's empowering. You can do something about that. I can't do anything about the national economy. I have very little influence over who gets elected to governor or president or who gets elected to Congress. I have the same influence and vote in that you do, and we certainly should vote and do our best to influence others to vote as we think things should best happen. That's a whole nother topic. But the fact of the matter is, you've got to, if you're in business, you've got to be successful regardless of any of that. So don't let yourself get caught into the trap of thinking that somehow there are outside forces at play here and you're powerless about them. That's absolutely not true. Don't think that way, and you'll be a lot happier and a lot more productive in what you're trying to do. I remember a number of years ago when we first started our company, and we were working out of our house over here in north of Atlanta, and my wife and I were sitting at a kitchen table, and we were opening up checks that people had sent us for work we had done. And she's kind of joking around, and she says, I can't believe these people just send us money. And I'll say, honey, these people aren't just sending us money. They owe us this money. We've done work for them. And it's sort of like a little light went off in our house, in our minds, and both of us sitting there. And we said, you know, holy cow, we have customers. We're actually a business. That was about 25 years ago. And that's how long we've been in business now. And very much removed from those days, which is still sort of the thrill of being in business, serving people, and the fact that you get paid for doing it. It's an amazing thing. Back when I first started EMA, I was considering starting EMA, I had a friend of mine that had a similar business. And since the business, particularly back in those days, working on electronic motor drives, was very heavily field service oriented. It still is. We're very much into that even right now. This friend of mine's advice was don't hire anyone. His idea and his thoughts were that employees just added cost, complication, and headaches to you. And this gentleman, this particular guy, was making a very good living as a one-man show. And honestly, I gave that some consideration. And it was true, especially back then, that I had the skills to do the job. I could do it. I could just sell myself. And when I actually sat and started looking at that, it wouldn't take that many customers for me to make a pretty nice living doing that. It's very simple. I had managed employees before at another company, so I knew some of the headaches and was acutely aware of some of the headaches and the problems that accompany employees. And I think that's really something every entrepreneur should think about and consider if you're thinking about starting a business. On the one hand, being a one-man show has its drawbacks. If you have any success at building a customer base, then taking time off from that business, for instance, is going to be difficult. The number of customers you can have probably is quite limited. You can only sell yourself because you can't really grow beyond what you can do yourself. And this is a little bit of something younger people may not realize, but there's also the problem of growing older. You know, what looks good to you at 30, working the hours and the travel and all those things that may entail, does not necessarily look so good to you at 50. And trust me, getting older is the only alternative to dying, so you should really put that in your plans as you're doing it. And the upside of being a one-man show, well, it's simple. It's very simple. I have a good friend right here in the Atlanta area that writes programs for machines. And he told me when he founded his business some years ago, he had two goals. It was to make more money and to make his life more simple. He works from his home. And his business has been very successful. In fact, he has to turn down business often simply because he doesn't have time to do it. I suggested to him at one point that he think about hiring another programmer. And I was pointing out to him, you're probably leaving money on the table by not doing that. And he reminded me that while that might help his first goal of making more money, it was not in line with his second goal, which was to make his life more simple. And I think at least from a clarity of purpose standpoint, he has it right. That's not how I would do it and not how I have done it. But for him, it seems to have been the proper course of action. This particular person, for instance, is very comfortable, working completely alone. You know, you may not be. And if you've never done it, you'd better think about it. A lot of us grow up in other environments where we're around other people, and we think we'd be perfectly happy working by ourselves all the time. There are a lot of people, let me tell you, a lot of people that do that, and what they'll tell me is after a few months of that, they really don't like it. They don't like working by themselves. They don't like not being able to exchange ideas with other people at work and take a break from work and chat with someone about something else, and they didn't realize how important that was to them at the time. When they don't have it around, they really miss it. So it's just something you need to think about if you're thinking about starting a business, if you're going to be a one-man or one-woman show, or if you're going to have employees. And once you do decide to hire another person, if you make that decision, it changes everything. I'm going to tell you that for me, I didn't handle it all that well right in the beginning, and it surprised me a bit because I had managed a good number of employees at another company, and I thought I knew how to do it. Well, and I had been reasonably successful at it. But for some reason, that seemed to change when I had my own business. Here's an example. I'd be out all week either doing service work or calling on clients and leaving a couple of technicians at that time and a clerk back in the office to take care of things. And the techs were supposed to be doing repairs. Of course, the clerk was taking care of administration functions. And on a number of occasions, I'd come back to find that the technicians were stuck on the same problem they were on when I left. And, of course, I was acutely aware of the fact that meant no billings had gone out the door, and yet our overhead continued to pile up. And I didn't handle that all that well. We were operating at that point very close to the edge financially, and I had a lot of stress. And to make matters worse, on more than one occasion, I would come back, and the administration person had really made some bad mistakes in our bookkeeping situation, and I had to spend hours, usually on a weekend or at night, cleaning up those mistakes. And so the stress of that, honestly, plus my own inexperience, caused me to fly off the handle with a lot of people. In a couple of cases, I probably should have terminated an incompetent employee sooner. In other cases, I should have spent more time helping them to be successful. But let me tell you, in any case, yelling at people is not leadership. It's just bullying, really. It's also, it's very unprofessional. It's unacceptable. And I'm not proud of that at all. And in our company now, we absolutely forbid that. We don't allow people to, I don't yell at people, and we don't let anyone else yell at people. We don't do that. And honestly, from a practical standpoint, it makes things worse, not better. If you need to terminate someone, you need to terminate them. You don't need to yell at them. Jim Collins, one of my favorite authors, in his landmark book, Good to Great, uses the analogy of a bus. And here's what he says. If you'll view your business like a bus, and many of us think that it's our job to determine, to get on that bus and drive it, and just drive it where we want it to go. But Collins points out that more important than that is who you have on the bus, because the who is on your bus determines where your bus can go. If you don't have good technicians and you're a technical business, well, then you're not going to go very far driving that bus as a technical business. So you've got it. You have to spend time putting the right people on the bus. Now, again, this is if you decide to hire employees. So you need to spend time determining who is on your bus. Since we were a technical business primarily, early in the years, I spent a lot of time attempting to test for technical abilities. And that was my primary hiring criteria. And that was not always the right thing to do. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com, podcast on eddiemayfield.com and iTunes. A lot more to come. You're listening to Eddie Mayfield on Driven to Business. Right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. We're here every Saturday morning at 11 o'clock right here on WAFS Atlanta's Biz 1190. Tell your friends, by the way, as I mentioned right before the break, we are streaming live on biz1190.com. And if you miss part of today's program, or if you have a friend that needs to hear this program, get them to go to eddiemayfield.com and check out the podcast of today's program. You'll also find us on iTunes, and by the way, you can search Eddie Mayfield, Driven to Business, on iTunes and subscribe to our program. By the way, also, Isaac here tells me, and I have it, there is an app here from Biz 1190 you can download from the iTunes App Store. Just call Biz 1190, and with that, you can, there's a number of great things, a number of great programs on here, including ours, and you can hear, listen to the streaming and do many other things from that app, so check that out. We're talking today about So You Want to Start a Business. And as I said in the beginning, this is not just for those that want to start a business. Perhaps you're in a leadership role in an existing business, and the same entrepreneurial skills that will help you to start a business are the exact same skills that will help you be successful where you are now. We were talking right before the break. I was talking about Jim Collins, one of my favorite authors, and in his book, Good to Great, he uses an analogy of a bus. This is a great way to think of your business. It's a bus. And it's your job as a leader of that business to put people in the right seats in that bus. That is your primary job if you're going to hire people. I was mentioning before that since we're a technical business, I placed an enormous amount of emphasis on the technical skills of people we would hire. I got told once by a consultant, and I rejected his advice at first. Turned out he was right, though, when it was all said and done. And he told me that I respected technical abilities too much. Now, I would argue with him and say, we're a technical company. I have to have people that are good with electrical skills. And he would say, you are ignoring everything else to hire that. And that's exactly what I was doing. And you know, in that same line of thought, even if I were hiring a clerical type back then, I applied almost the same criteria. As for instance, if the person had prior experience with our particular accounting program or something, I'd hire them really despite any other factors. Let me tell you, those are very costly mistakes. What I learned the hard way, and you know, there's two ways to learn things. That people say experience is the best teacher. Let me tell you, experience is a good teacher, but experience is a hard teacher. Let me tell you a little easier way to do that. Learn by someone else's experience. I'll give you a quick story that I had a friend that had a business that got in a lot of trouble with the IRS over withholding taxes. And what he was doing, you know, some of you know this, some of you don't, you know, you withhold money from your employees and then you pay them to the IRS on some schedule. Well, if you're running tight, there's a real tendency to want to borrow that money and use it and then make it back up when it's due. Well, that's been the downfall of a lot of businesses. And I had a buddy that got in real trouble with the IRS over that. So when I started my business a number of years later, I determined we weren't going to do that. So I was so anal about that in the beginning. I set up an entirely separate account, and I would deposit those monies over to the other account right away and not allow myself to touch them. The idea being that I never had any problems with the IRS. And by the way, we've never had any. Just a little side piece of advice right there. But in hiring people, technical skills are important. If you're hiring a clerical person, a bookkeeper, certainly there are skills that are important. But here's what I learned the hard way about that. Intelligence, morals, I'll just say, intelligence or character, however you want to put that, intelligence, character, and attitude are the most important criteria. I remember listening to a presentation by a billionaire, Ross Perot, many years ago. And he was talking about customer service in his presentation. And at the end of it, he opened up for questions, and one of the people in the crowd, all of whom were pretty experienced business types, one of them asked him, said, "Mr. Perot, how do you go about training your employees to be friendly and helpful to customers?" And Perot, this was long before he got into politics, he kind of shot back in that classic clipped speech that he's sort of famous for. He said, "Why don't you try hiring friendly people to start with and see if that doesn't resolve the problem?" And he's absolutely right about that. You know, if a person is friendly, then you don't have to teach them to be friendly. So if you need friendly people in your business, and let me tell you, you do, then hire friendly people. Jim Collins has another piece of advice regarding employees that I think is very helpful. He asks this simple question you can ask yourself. If I had known what I know now about this employee, if I had known back when I hired this guy what I know now, would I still hire him? So that's a great clarifying question, because what it says is it points out to you in rather stark terms whether or not you've made a hiring mistake. And many, many of us have found ourselves in that situation. But here's a caveat about that. A number of business leaders that I have great respect for, Jack Welch being one of them, Collins being another, and many others, you have no right as an employer to terminate anyone to whom you haven't been giving feedback about their failings. Everybody deserves a chance to correct their performance once made aware of their shortcomings. Terminations should never, ever be a surprise. But you know what I find in a strange and sort of convoluted way? Many, many of us don't want to be unkind to an employee. So we just don't say anything negative about their work. And what we do, we just sit back and we get more and more and more frustrated with what they're doing. And then finally, one day, it's like we overload ourselves a bit and we just go in there and with very little warning, we just steal ourselves. We go in there and we fire them. It goes without saying, that's hardly being kind to an employee. And in fact, it's incredibly unfair. Terminations should never be a surprise. If it ever is, then you aren't doing your job. You know, here's a few things to consider if you're thinking about starting a business. And there are many, many, many. I will say right away, I tell people this all the time. I've never in my entire life been in retail, so I really don't have much advice for people in retail. I've never understood, for instance, how you can sell an item for $2 or $3 and pay somebody to sell that item for $2 or $3. In our business, I'm just telling you, in our business, our average invoice is probably around $2,000. So I'm used to dealing on that level, and that's where I grew up doing, and I don't really know anything much about retail. Now, that's not to say there aren't a lot of people in retail that are being very, very, very successful. So obviously, they know how to do it. I'm just admitting that's a side of the retail business I have never completely understood. But here's a couple things to consider just in general if you're starting a business. And I think this applies to everybody. Play the what I always call the what if I'm successful game. We do this at work. If we're thinking about chasing a particular type of business or a particular, even a particular customer at time, we will try to visualize, okay, what if we get this? What's it going to look like if we get it? And what you have to do is detach yourself a bit emotionally and just visualize what the day-to-day is going to look like if you have that. And to your surprise, it may well be that you're not going to like that at all. And what you find yourself doing that. We bought a log cabin in North Georgia, my wife and I did, some years ago. And near there is a little cozy restaurant that we like to go eat breakfast. And I got to know the owner. And one day, to my complete surprise, she asked me if I'd consider buying her business up there. And I was taken aback a bit, but I got her to tell me her story. And here's what happened. She and her husband had enjoyed visiting the North Georgia mountains and eating at this little restaurant. And they kept thinking it would be a great break from the stress of city life just to go up there, a little more relaxed lifestyle, and to operate this little cafe. You probably can already tell where this story is going. But when they got there and actually got into the business of running this little cafe, well, it wasn't exactly what she thought that would be. I'm going to finish the story after the break. Do stay tuned, by the way. Remind you again, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. You can find information about our program. And by the way, anybody that I talk about in our program, I usually have links to them on eddiemayfield.com. More to come. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking today about so you want to start a business. And again, as I've said several times now, don't tune us out if you have no intentions of starting a business. If you're in a leadership role in business, you will find this interesting and I hope helpful. I also hope to be encouraging in this. I one of the great things about living in our country is the idea that you can start a business. And I'm an example of this. When you can start a business out of your basement in a house up in Lilburn, Georgia, and it ended up being a nationwide medium-sized business that has provided great careers and jobs for a number of people, that's a great thing. And that's a great thing about America. And you know what? The fact that I started it back in 1988, 1988 was no better time to start a business than there is right now. I had talked earlier about the negativism that appears to just permeate our culture about how all the good jobs are gone and all the nowadays things are there are no great inventions left to have or anything. Well, that's just crazy. This is a great time to start a business. One thing I do caution people about is don't keep looking back to the 90s or to any past period of time and hoping to go back to that. We're probably not. This is probably the normal right now. You're living in normal right now. So, sort of get in Realville and run your business and run your life as it is now, not like it was some years ago. I was talking about a little restaurant before the break, a little restaurant up in North Georgia where this couple had bought it, looking to have sort of this idyllic little laid back life. And what they failed to realize was it running a little restaurant in the mountains up there, it means getting up every morning at 4:30 a.m. and start getting the restaurant ready for breakfast at 6:30 or 7. It also meant taking no off days. And because this is a small business in a small area and it's not going to grow beyond a certain size. Again, if you're going to start a business, you need to think that through. Visualize what success looks like. And, if you're in a small area, success is not going to be 500 people eating breakfast with you. It's going to be 15 or 20 eating breakfast with you. Okay, figure out the profits of that. What they had found was in their little restaurant, which was successful. It was run very well. It was successful. But they couldn't really afford to hire any employees. Consequently, they couldn't leave the business. They couldn't take vacations without shutting down the business. If you're closed on a holiday, which you'd like to take off, and many, many places do close on holidays, but the consideration is by closing on a holiday, I'm missing the business I would have gotten, and this is our income. So those are the kinds of things you need to think about. So play the what if we're successful game before you get into it, and try. And again, it's hard to do, but push yourself out, push your emotions out on it a bit, and look as realistically as you can look. You can also talk to other people in that business. That's a great way to do that. Talk to other folks in the business and see if that's what you want to do. Let me give you another little hint about starting a business. Be realistic about money. Listen, out of cash is out of business. That's just a fact. So think your cash requirements through carefully. Every one of us have heard inspiring stories about businesses that started with nothing and just exploded into success. I always remind people when they tell me stories like that, that you need to remember people get hit by lightning too, but it's not that common. And that is not a common business story. That's not a common business story. If you are living paycheck to paycheck right now, and let's say, for instance, if you couldn't afford to get your car repaired if it broke, this might not be the best time for you to start a business. Because no matter how well you plan, you won't think of everything. And those unanticipated expenses can sink you. And here's the other thing that honestly, this is something I had to learn the hard way. Doing work, invoicing them, and getting paid are two different things altogether. Honestly, to me, that's one of the most frustrating realities I faced. I would work very, very hard, particularly back in the early days of the business, to land a customer. I'd work hard to do excellent work. We'd send them an invoice, and 90 days later, it's still unpaid. And meanwhile, our expenses march on. I was not very good at collections. In fact, I'm still not. We have other people that do that. I have a hard time. And again, this is a bit of a confession. I have a hard time not getting very emotionally attached to that. And by the way, that's not a good thing to do in business. If someone complains to you about your business, it's very, very hard not to take it personally. You really can't. You've got to be objective about it and let it go, because otherwise it doesn't happen. But I'm just telling you, for me, I had a hard time with collections especially. I would tend to get much too abrupt on the phone with a customer. I can recall a customer one time that owed us several thousand dollars and kept stalling on paying us. And I had called him four or five times. I was doing all of that back then. And I really, really, really got pretty blunt and pretty rude, to be honest about it, with him on the phone. What he told me was, I'm bringing that check by there next week. I'm going to punch you in the nose when I come by. And I said, well, just bring a check. That'll be fine. I have learned to have other people do that. They don't like me doing collections in the office anymore. I have other people doing that. They do a much better job than I do. That did the idea of what I did learn about that did drive me to do a couple of things that are very positive. One of them is to place an emphasis on collections. You know, if you're the kind of business that goes out and you get a credit card right away, or I give you cash right away, or whatever, that's fine. This doesn't apply to you. But many, many, many business to business type businesses, you're going to be required to invoice. Be very careful up front and be very explicit with people about the terms that you're going to do that in. If you need to be paid in 10 days, be sure you say that and get agreement with that before you do the work, not after. You can never discuss terms very well after a job. Always do it before you do it. And the second thing is to put some emphasis on collection. Have a system for that. You can actually outsource that there. People will do that for you. But do whatever that you need to do. And here's the second thing. Don't do business with people who won't pay you. Now, that may sound so simple. Well, of course you wouldn't do that. Well, yes, you do. You know, especially if you're a new struggling business and you're having a hard time getting customers, you just want to do work. So if you call some guy up and he says, yeah, come out and do whatever you do, you know, whatever services or products that you provide, you go do them, and he doesn't pay you. And then he calls you to come out again, and you're thinking, well, I can't lose this customer. Look, the definition of a customer is somebody that's paying you. Somebody is having you do work and not paying you, that's not really a customer. You don't need that. You just have to get disciplined about that. And you have to say, I'm not coming back out there until you pay the bill. We've actually had, in our business, electronic motor drive business, very often the equipment we work on is very, very critical to the industrial plant or whatever. And so they can't be down. And we've had before where somebody's not paying us. And then another piece of equipment in that plant goes down. And they will say, we really need you out here. We're losing a lot of money. Say, well, that's funny because you didn't pay the last bill. We're not coming. They will very often pay the bill right then. And we do more than that. We will say, not only have you got to pay the one that's past due, since you didn't pay us, you're going to have to pay us in advance for this one or we're not coming. And they do it. Again, I'm just a little bit of insight into the way our business works. Yours may be a little bit different, but the main point is to be sure that you can do that, that you are going to get paid for what you do. Here's another little point. Be able to explain what your business does in a few sentences. Again, that sounds so simple, but I find in talking to people in business, particularly technology businesses, they can't explain what it is they do. It's not that they don't know, they just haven't figured out a way to explain it very well. I was once asked to talk to an engineering services company, these were just friends of mine, about some marketing issues they were having. I went over and met with them, and I asked the two guys, because I really didn't know, I asked them to explain to me what exactly the kind of services, engineering services, their business provided. These two guys talked to me for about 30 minutes, and I have an engineering background, and I could not understand what they did after 30 minutes of both of them talking to me. And I actually sort of interrupted them and was kind of kidding around and say, I think I've discovered your problem here. Keep in mind, these were very smart and talented people. They really were. But they were trying to be so many different things to so many different people, they just lacked focus. Listen, if a prospect doesn't know what you do, even if they think you're a very smart person, they're not going to be doing business with you. Be as simple as you can be when envisioning and describing what your business will do. It will help you stay focused. And focus is a big deal in business. Here's another one. It sort of goes along with that. Is it who's your market? You hear sometimes politicians and entertainers and others are cautioned or perhaps criticized for believing their own press. And you know, we in business get like that a little bit too. We sort of believe what we think about ourselves, that we, you know, everybody wants our product and so forth and so on. Let me tell you, in the electronic motor drive business, I never have that problem because we've always joked in our business that no one, there's only a very small group of people that even know what we do. And so our market's rather narrow. And if you stand up at a party and start talking about what we do, people are going to move away from you because it's kind of boring to most people. So we've kind of learned that. However, when we are talking to our prospects, to people who have electronic motor drives and know what they are, we're very, very, very focused on what we tell them. And we're very clear. And they have no question what it is that we do. And that takes them to doing it. Well, you know, one of the first questions I like to ask people is, who's your market? Who are you going to sell to? Think about this for a minute. Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple, Steve Jobs built devices to sell to us that none of us even knew we wanted. Think about that a minute. He came up and invented things to build and sell that we didn't know we wanted until after he built them. Now, that's very different. He was a visionary, and he was able to convince large numbers of people to buy into a technological future that looked very different than anything that had happened before. And you could make the argument that Android phones are better than the iPhone and all that. But you can't argue that Steve Jobs was not wildly successful at changing much of the modern world. And he's not the only person in history that's done that. You can think of guys like Henry Ford, Alexander Graham Bell, others that made significant changes in the way the world works. Now, that's one kind of way to start a business, is you actually introduce a product or service that no one's ever done before and people want it. That's not been my experience. It may well be what you're set up to do, but it wasn't us. The other more traditional way of doing business is to determine what a particular demographic is already buying and just deliver it to them, to market to them and sell to them. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. One more segment to go. Stick around. Welcome back to the final segment of Driven to Business. We're talking about, so you want to start a business, huh? And I hope it's been helpful to you. We are streaming live, as I've said many times already, on biz1190.com. I do want to keep emphasizing to you that we are a podcast. We have as many people listen to our podcast as we do listen to the live broadcast. So we're podcast on eddiemayfield.com and iTunes. Check us out there. Subscribe to us. I was giving a few hints about business. I'd said the first thing was play the what if I'm successful game. Try to visualize what it's actually going to look like if you're successful and see if that's really what you want to spend your life doing, what your day-to-day life will be like. Be realistic about money. Be realistic about money. Be able to explain what it is your business does. That's very important that you can do that. And what we were talking about right before the break is to talk about our market. Who's your market? We talked about Steve Jobs building a market that no one knew even existed until Steve came along and began building things that we all wanted and didn't know we wanted them until he built them. The more traditional way, and what most of us probably do, is to determine what a demographic market is already buying and figure out good ways to deliver that to them. I spent my entire career working in small niche markets, but you can overplay that. If the market you're thinking about is so small and the service is pretty low priced, a business dealing exclusively with that might not be viable. This is a bit of a stretch, but you know, let's suppose, for instance, that you want to open a guitar store, but you only want to sell to left-handed guitar players. People that are left-handed, there is a market for that. People that are left-handed often need to buy a guitar that's designed to be played left-handed. And these lefty guitars can vary from very inexpensive to very expensive, and almost all manufacturers make left-handed guitars. But if you were opening a guitar store and you told me you're only going to do it for left-handed players, I would probably warn you against that and say, you know, that's not a great idea. That's too much of a narrowing the market right there. Guitar stores already serve a very small segment of the population. So if you narrow that even further, it's going to make your success very difficult. Would it be impossible? No, probably not. But success in a situation like that, at least in my opinion, is not very likely. Here's a few things to note about niche marketing. First of all, identify the niche. Figure out what will a particular person or business that buys that product or service look like, and that's essential. There's a country song about looking for love in all the wrong places, and that could easily be a business song about looking for business in all the wrong places. Spending your time trying to sell to people that either cannot or don't need your product or service, either cannot buy or don't need your product and service, that's a waste of time. You're just wasting time. Spend time on figuring out what your typical customer would look like and go after them. The better you can identify that, the better you can identify who a prospect is, the more success you'll have. The other thing to look at is who else is playing in the field. You know, bad news here, but the world wasn't waiting on you to be born. You know, competition can be looked at in two ways. One way is that people are making money serving the market, and so can you. That's one way to look at it. The other hand, if it's so competitive that there's so much downward pressure on pricing that you can't sell this service or product at a profit, well, then that's another story. We talk sometimes about mature versus expanding markets. A mature market is a market in which the only way you can get business is to take it from a competitor. An expanding market is a market where the market is growing and expanding and new prospects are all the time coming into the load. That's a much more fun business to be in, let me tell you. But people are successful in both of those situations. But you change your marketing approach depending on where you are. Once you identify the demographic that will buy your product and service, give some thought to are there any complementary products and services you can offer? Don't go so far to lose focus, but this is a rather simple, silly example. Let's say you have a cigar store. You're selling cigars. Well, maybe in addition to selling cigars, you ought to sell lighters and cigar cutters and other things. And here's one reason. You don't want them to buy a cigar from you and then go to your competitor to buy those other products that go along with that cigar. So you always think about that. Number five, prepare yourself for the long haul. For most of us, business is a marathon, not a sprint. Again, as I had mentioned about getting struck by lightning, there are businesses that are overnight successes. I mean, they take off, and in 2 or 3 years, you'll hear they're just setting the woods on fire. It used to be a long time ago. I paid a lot of attention to that. I used to see companies that were listed, most rapidly growing company in a state or something like that. And I began to notice something interesting about that. two or three years later, a lot of those businesses were bankrupt. And the truth is, they outgrew their ability to manage themselves. Now, I'm very aggressive about growing our business, and you should be aggressive about growing yours. But the same token, prepare yourself for, this is a marathon, not a sprint. Don't think of it that way. Business is a lot more than just creativity and inspiration. It's very hard work. It's grueling work, and sometimes. And if you talk to a bunch of entrepreneurs that have been successful, here's the most common theme you're going to hear, is that it's hard work, especially in the beginning. Just be sure you understand that. I think it's Gary Player, the famous golfer, that said one time, it was funny, but the harder he worked, the luckier he seemed to get. Luck has very little to do with it. Luck has all to do. Luck has very little to do with it. Hard work is what has to do with it. It's very hard work to get a business started. Just be sure you understand that, and I hope you have great success. Success usually comes after a bit, not right away with it. You know, I don't know. I've often told people that one of the examples I can be in business, there's a great poster that you see around sometimes. It's sort of a smart aleck type poster, but it shows a ship sinking and going down, and the theme under it says, perhaps the purpose of your life is to serve as a warning to others. I mean, that could well be. I often tell people that I have made every mistake in business just about that can be made. So I if you want to know about things not to do in business, you can absolutely look at a lot of things I've done and say, ooh, don't do that, because it causes some problems. But despite that, we've had a lot of success. And many, many, many of my friends in business have a lot of success in all different kinds of business. And here's the deal. As I'd mentioned in the last little segment there, it's hard work. Stay after it. It does not come overnight. It takes a commitment. Like everything else in life, it takes persistence and commitment. You have to stay with it. And it's not always rosy, and it doesn't look like all that much fun all the time. I don't know, again, how great an example or how common our particular story of starting a business. But you know what? It started a little before I started the business. Right before I started our business, I was working for a company in Texas. It gave me a lot of opportunities. They gave me a lot of leadership opportunities. They taught me the business that I'm in right now. But you know what had happened? Just prior to going to work for that company, I was unemployed for a period of time. It's the first time in my life and the only time in my life I've ever been unemployed. And when that company hired me out in Texas, I moved from Birmingham, Alabama to Houston, Texas to take this job. I was so happy to have that job and so grateful to have it that I threw everything I had into that job. I mean, I was so glad just to have a job. And I learned everything about that business I could learn, and I was determined I was going to be the best employee they had in that company, and no matter what it took, that's what was going to happen. That actually was the learning ground and became the genesis later of starting my own company. If you are not a good employee, you are not going to be very good at running a business. Because the things that make a successful business person are the exact same things that make a good employee. It goes back to intelligence, to character, and the idea that you work hard, and an attitude. You know how to make your, to be very successful where you are, make your boss successful. We had Jimmy Collins on here, who many, many years was the second in command with a Truett Cathy. And he talks about the joy of serving a guy like Truett Cathy. And there is great joy in that. And it also pays off because you begin to learn what you're doing. We're glad you've been here today. I hope this has been helpful to you. You've been listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's biz1190.com. Tell your friends about it. Go to eddiemayfield.com. Check out a blog about today's show and the podcast of it. And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.